And good evening, America. Good afternoon, Australia. You're back listening to Tony Lontis and Tracy Horton on Radio Tony's Tackling Trauma series. And today we are going to continue our conversation around tackling trauma. And just a quick reminder that you can re-listen to the show on Radio. com. You can jump on to the YouTube channel or jump on to BBS Radio and search for Radio Tony, and you'll find all the shows there. Now, along with this series, we have a downloadable trauma book that's for free, and you can find that on Radio Tony under resources. So, radiotony.com under resources. If you're wanting to connect with Tracy or buy her book, it's Tracy Horton. com, Tracy with an E, Horton.com. Now, just a quick reminder, we are not psychologists. However, we have a collective of many decades in working in this area, both with our own healing and with helping others heal their trauma. As you know, I've been speaking to Tracy for the last 7 weeks, and Tracy is an international award-winning speaker, author, and qualified life coach. She has worked with hundreds of men and women across the last 25 years, helping them rebuild their lives from trauma and difficulties. She comes from an alcoholic, abusive, poverty-stricken family, and she has risen above that to now present people with insight and wisdom from her own healing and journey. And a quick recap, when we talk about trauma is an emotional response to an event like an accident, an assault, or a natural disaster. And it follows certain stages of healing, and it can result in unpredictable emotions, flashbacks, strained relationships, and even physical symptoms such as headache, backache, and nausea. We believe, both Tracy and I, that it's important to talk about trauma. The more people we talk to and help heal, the better the world will look. Most of the evil that we see in the world has some relation to unhealed trauma. Therefore, we are passionately talking about it each and every week. Last week, we spoke about triggers and trauma, and a trigger is a psychological or physical response, such as a sight, sound, smell, that brings us back feelings from trauma. And it reminds us of our past trauma. We talked about how to get through these and how to live life fully whilst recovering and healing from trauma. This week, we want to explore the relationship between trauma, guilt, shame, and blame. And so, first up, I'm going to welcome my glorious co-host, Tracy. Good afternoon, Tracy.
Hi, how are you? What a big week, hey? We're about to tackle the big stuff.
We are about to tackle the big stuff. And just a reminder to anyone listening to the show today, please reach out if this triggers anything within your heart, mind, soul, body. Please reach out and talk to someone. There's always someone around. And this week is a tougher conversation, particularly talking around guilt, shame, and blame. But we can't talk about trauma and not talk about these things. So I'm going to let Tracy introduce this section today. Over to you, Tracy.
You know, when we suffer trauma, which is always unwanted, it's never something we plan, it's never something we go looking for. Like you and I have always said, Tony, it's just this horrific, unwanted event that occurs and it creates an emotional response. So, in the process of what Tony and I have been doing, we began to talk about the fact that we wanted to give you from this show the keys to moving forward and being able to heal. Because trauma shows up unexpectedly, but it stays from choice. And I think that that's really hard for people to hear. I know there was times in my life it was hard to hear, excuse me. But it's true. Excuse me, Tony.
Yes, as we've been talking earlier in the show, it's not Australia, and this year we've actually had the highest levels of contaminants and pollens in the air. And as you can see, Tracy's got a scratchy throat. You can probably hear my own scratchy throat. So not only do we talk and spend our life talking, we've got this seasonal thing happening at the moment. So
I apologize.
think I'm going to get
Yeah.
on.
So, it is a choice that we make, and it's important for us to realize that we have choice, because sometimes trauma really takes that away from us. It removes us, puts us in a place of feeling locked, feeling caught up, and we feel like, can we actually get out? But we can, can't we, Tony? You and I are
We
living proof of
can.
it.
Yes. I think that to talk about trauma without talking about these hard feelings, and when I talk about hard feelings, I'm talking about those distressing feelings we have, we feel shame. And we can't talk about shame without talking about guilt and blame and the differences around those topics. So when we're talking about guilt, guilt is also an emotional experience, and it co occurs when you realize, accurately or not, because guilt is a feeling, it just happens in our mind, that we have compromised our own standards of conduct or have violated some other universal moral standard that bears significantly on us. So guilt is first and foremost an emotion, and as an emotion, we can manage it. There's a number of causes of guilt. The first one of those is when you think you did something, there was an action that was deserving of remorse. So a simple one is as a child when you learn that lying is not okay. So that's just a simple, there'll be a guilt attached to the lie that you told, and there may be a ramification for that lie. The guilt cause number two is something you didn't do but you wanted to do. So you've deviated from your normal moral compass or your normal code of ethics, and you thought something that was not acceptable. Again, guilt is triggered, guilt is just a feeling, and it is manageable. Guilt cause number three is something you think you did. Before you start accusing yourself of doing something wrong, thinking something wrong, make sure it actually happened. Because your mind can play tricks on you when you are not in control of your thought patterns. Guilt cause number three is something we talk about where you didn't do enough for to help someone. So for women, this is often a key feeling of guilt around I didn't do enough. I haven't been enough of a mum today. I haven't been enough of a daughter today. I should have reached out to that friend that was sick. They're all guilt, yeah? Guilt is again something that you can examine and control. And the worst sort of guilt is the guilt that you're doing better than someone else. And again, I'll remind you that in Australia we have a syndrome called tall poppy syndrome. And often you'll look at other people and think that they are doing significantly better than you. And there's a guilt associated with that. More importantly, what we're talking about in terms of trauma, is something called survivor guilt. That is very much something that Tracy and I have both have had to work through. And survivor guilt looks like I should have done more to prevent what happened to me, when the reality is there's nothing that you could have done that would have prevented what happened to you. So guilt in itself isn't considered a destructive emotion, but it can be all-consuming and it can get the worst of you. So you need to think about guilt as a non-destructive emotion, and it is just an emotion. So when you feel that, stop, think, examine. Is it true? Is it real? Could I really have done anything? Have I not reached out to that person? And be a bit kinder to yourself. So Tracy, What are your thoughts around guilt this morning?
Guilt can be really debilitating because the problem with guilt is that we take it and we own it because we're raised in a society where it's one of the key things we're taught as children. Are you guilty of that? Did you do it right or wrong at school? And it's always with a consequence. So I think what happens, Tony, is as we get older and we move into this deep emotional realm of healing from trauma, we often can't settle with guilt because there's no right or wrong. There's no absolutes. There's no, like you said, when we're younger, who wrote on the board while I was out, says the teacher. I put my hand up. Okay, Tracy, you've got to clean the board. But, when I was holding guilt from people telling me, well, the only reason you were abused was because you were such an outgoing, cheeky child. You drew all the attention to yourself. There was no way I could settle that because there was no response for me to settle it. Because all my childhood, everybody is taught if you're guilty, there's a consequence. But what about when you're guilty for something that there's absolutely no consequence? And that's why, Tony, I love the fact that you've wrapped it with shame and blame because all three of them are connected. And when you've got shame and blame in your life, you will hold on to the guilt. And the sad thing about guilt is it makes you part of the problem that you never were. I know in my life for years I spent wishing I was ugly and I was shy and I was quiet because I didn't want to cause other men to want to do those things to me. And when I got to an adult age and realized what a ridiculous thought pattern that was and how I had to break it, because people put guilt on us very quickly around emotional issues and trauma. Because the guilt can be
Absolutely.
hard to live with. So in my life, the people that should have protected me put the guilt on me because they didn't. And I think that's really important for us to understand. Like you said, there's all different types of guilt, and it's not harmful in itself, but when we act out of it emotionally, it is extremely harmful.
Guilt is one of those things that it kind of sneaks up on you. I know that from time to time it sneaks up on me, and I'll have a certain thought around, oh my goodness, I didn't do X, Y, Z in terms of, usually it's in terms of reaching out to a person. Then I have to stop myself and go, okay, so did they not have the same opportunity to reach out? Yes, they did. The door was open, they didn't come through that door. That's fine. Okay. So in this case, my guilt is unfounded, and you have to get into the habit of questioning that emotion and thinking about it, then dealing with it before it becomes destructive. Because as Tracy said, guilt can be an incredibly destructive emotion if you allow it to take control or take hold in your mind. And then that leads us to the next conversation around blame. And so blame is the act of censoring or holding responsibility, making negative statements about an individual, person, or a group, about their actions or reactions that are socially or morally irresponsible. Blame is the opposite to praise. So when someone is responsible for doing something wrong, their action is blameworthy. So from this concept, there are usually five reasons around why we play the blame game. And the first one of those is in it's an excellent defense mechanism. Whether you call it projection, denial, or displacement, blame helps you preserve your sense of self-esteem by avoiding awareness about your own flaws and failings. So you need to think about blame as a defense mechanism in your life. So before allaying blame for something towards someone, stop and think about your role in that situation. Blame is a tool we use when we are in attack mode. So you don't want to be walking through life in attack mode. It's not good for you. It's destructive. It doesn't help resolve conflict. And both parties usually get hurt in that scenario. So, Tracy, what are your thoughts around blame today? I know that this is one of the key concepts you wanted to talk about today, in terms of recovery. So let's, from your perspective, let's talk about blame.
When something goes wrong, somebody is to blame, right? If our show drops out right now, then something is to blame. An airwave, somebody picked the wrong button, something happened. And we are okay with laying blame in logistical terms because we understand it. If the power goes out, every single person in the world goes looking for the power department to answer to them. But what happens is that when we become the victim, when the trauma is around us, we get so deeply emotionally triggered at trauma. Like we've always said, Tony, it's unwanted. It's not something you plan. So you go into this deep shock. And by the time you're ready to surface out of that shock, which can be weeks, months, or years, depending on the level of trauma, you have to stop allowing blame because you're often hurt. But the fact I always teach is this: it didn't make me any more bitter to be really honest to myself about the blame. It actually freed me to then stop being bitter. Because people think bitter people lay blame. But the blame belonged, and when I could give out the blame, when I could actually level it at the things that had happened. For instance, I could blame alcohol for my mum's condition. I could blame some of the behaviors that my father did for our lives being so poor, so disrupted. I could blame my parents for their behavior, which was why people stayed away from us, why we became very isolated. It didn't make me more bitter. It actually made me to then say, okay, so now I can forgive this. Now I can work through this. Now I can actually, now that it makes sense to me, I can look at what I could have done any different and learn from it, or I can just release it. And I think blame gets such a poor deal because so often we see it maliciously. But if people can, listening to the show today, just find that way to sit in it and just get comfortable with the truth of the blame. If I hit my daughter and I smack her and I harm her, it's my fault. I have to own that part of it. And when she can say that, then she doesn't go off and have several other abusive relationships. She can say, well, that was mum's part of it, and then she can release me and we can still have a relationship. And that's the beauty of it. And I think blame gets a really rough deal because we see it in DV. We see it, we always see the worst of it in media. But in actual fact, for a lot of the women and men that I work with, actually being able to logistically sit and say, you know what, this was the problem. This was the problem. That's the blame. Then they are actually able to release it and forgive it.
It's actually about taking responsibility for your part in that situation. So I think I don't like the term blame. I know we use it a lot and it gets aimed at people a lot. But if you can manage to not blame and just look at a situation as it is without allaying blame, the better off you'll be. Because Tracy and I know that if you are in the blame game and you are attacking with blame, then there's something within you that needs looking at and healing. And you often see in unhealed trauma that people will be readily blaming others, and it doesn't help you any to blame someone else. You need to release that blame, as Tracy's just described. You need to release it so that you can move on. And you don't have control over some of the things that happened in trauma to you, but you do have control over the way that you react. And by releasing the blame, you are strengthening and healing your life. And so it's a human quality that's it's easy to blame someone else rather than take and look at your own responsibility. So I'm not saying, like in Tracy's case, when she was a child and all that horrible abuse happened, there's no responsibility for Tracy in that scenario. The responsibility is all towards the perpetrators that did that to her. Yeah? So it's
Yeah, for
about
sure.
a different way of thinking about your particular trauma. And then in thinking about trauma, we cannot talk about shame. We cannot not talk about trauma and healing without talking about shame, rather. Now, shame is a huge, big topic and possibly worthy of a show on its own, but we wanted to put it in with this so that we could highlight the differences between guilt, blame, and shame. So shame is a very destructive emotion, and it is a feeling that can overwhelm people, and it doesn't have any real purpose. So guilt's purpose is to help us to think about our actions and either change them or work on them. Shame has no such usable quality to it. When someone has shame, they are hurting themselves internally. They are blaming themselves for events for which they had no control over. Shame is the thing that damages a person's self-esteem the most. There's no other emotion that can damage your self-esteem so much as shame. So you can't ignore it. It's a debilitating emotion, and it can destroy all the relationships that you have in and around you. And it often stems from a traumatic experience. And people often think that they could have done something different. They could have had a different outcome to prevent the particular trauma that happened to them, and that's where shame steps in. I'm going to throw to Tracy in a minute, but before I do, I just want to read a little something from Brené Brown. Now, many of you would know that Brené is the premier researcher in and around shame. And I just want to read this quickly before I pop over to Tracy. So Brené Brown says, shame is a focus on self, guilt is a focus on behavior. Do you see the difference, people? Shame is a focus on self. Guilt is a focus on behavior, and you can change behavior. Shame says, I am bad. Guilt says, I did something bad. So for many of you, I know when I first heard this definition around shame and guilt, it was mind-blowing for me. So it actually helped quite a lot in my own mind, understanding that the shame is a focus on self and that guilt is a focus on behavior, and I could readily do something about my behaviors. I.e., instead of attaching blame, I would no longer do that. I would sit with it, figure out what it was about, allay responsibility where that was due, or let it go, as Tracy said previously. So guilt is, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Shame is, I'm sorry, I am a mistake. Guilt is adaptive and helpful to call yourself to account and hold up your actions against your own values and against your own ethics. And shame is an intensely painful feeling, and it's experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. And I know, having experienced shame for most of my life, I know exactly. And when I was preparing for this session today, in even just writing about it, I'm like, I know what that feeling feels like. And I know Tracy's going to tell you about this from her perspective in a moment, it is intensely uncomfortable and destructive and hurtful. And I don't think that that shame feeling is productive in any way. It makes us disconnect from other humans. Again, humans are hardwired for connection. And in your recovery from trauma, that's going to be the thing that gets you through, is your connection and storytelling with other humans. Shame disconnects that connection. And so, Tracy, I know that you've done so much work on shame. So I want to hand over to you now with your story around shame and what that did for your life.
Often when we have trauma, the biggest issue for us is how everybody else reacts. And when that doesn't go supportively and beautifully and kindly, when people can't deal with how you present after your own trauma, or the truth of the trauma to you. So in my case, it was all around abuse and being harmed. When people couldn't deal with that, they shame you by not supporting you and not allowing you to have a voice. So for me, Tony, I was shamed for a big part of my life. I'm in my late 50s now. I was probably living through the fallout of shame into my 30s. And what shame does is it disconnects us from other people being able to love us, because it either sidelines us into being not enough or forces us to be more than enough. And both times they're false self. You know, our goal is always to live in our true self, our truest version of who we truly are. But when we have shame, it causes us to have false self. So the person who is able to be very productive can become a workaholic that cannot relate to anybody other than if they're at work. Or the person that's able to be compassionate, creative, can become a hippie that lives 45 Ks out of town and cannot talk to anybody or connect to anybody and won't even vote or tell you where they live or have a phone, and they get weird. And I don't mean any disrespect by that, because I know that's a choice that a lot of people do make, but I've seen people bump off the grid because of shame, because they just can't feel like they fit in. So when people come to work with me, I always tell them that if they want to deal with shame, they have to race. And that stands for recognize, accept, change, and enjoy. So first of all, recognize the point of shame and why it came in. What is it that made you shameful? Well, for me, it was that people kept taking stuff from me they didn't take from anybody else. So I can't have been good enough. I can't have been nice enough. I can't have been normal. And then to accept the story that is created around it. Okay, so the truth of the matter is I'm a victim of domestic violence and sexual abuse. There's no doubt about that. That's my truth. But what can I change about it? What I can change about it is it doesn't have to be my story today. It doesn't have to be what continues on for me. It doesn't have to be how it is. And then enjoy who you are and make it enjoyable for people to be around you. So for me, I've often told you this, Tony, over coffee. One of the things I had to really guard when I was in shame was my very sarcastic tongue. I could take people out at the knees in four sentences. And it's never nice to be around someone like that. But I was in such shame and so broken, I believed that if anybody got to truly know me, they wouldn't want to be around me. So I made sure it was impossible to truly get to know me. Everybody was at arm's length. Everybody, you know, I was a different person to everybody. But, you know, once I began to accept that, once I began to start the race, recognize, accept, change, and enjoy, once I began to enjoy who I was and become authentic, I found out people really enjoyed my company. I found out I made friends like you that I have for a lifetime, incredible people that I admire all the time, all of a sudden wanted to hang out with me. And and I think that that's really important for people to understand, is that the worst part about shame is it will disconnect you, and you can't actually heal disconnected. Oh, my goodness, I wish you could, because I wouldn't be seeing 80 people a week. I wouldn't be running the courses I am. I wouldn't have, you know, you and I wouldn't even be doing this show. But the fact of the matter is that shame tells you you're not good enough to be around people or with people, and it holds you from being healed, which is the biggest challenge for you.
Absolutely. There are still moments when I still have those remnants. They come up from time to time, and that feeling of I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy enough. If the one thing you get from healing your trauma is to negate the power that shame has over your life, it will be worth it. Because that horrible, ghastly, dark feeling of not being good enough, I don't want to be seen, I don't want to be heard, I don't want anyone to get to know me, that's not living, that's not the way that humans were designed to live. And again, the issue with shame is that it causes those feelings and it causes you to want to disconnect from humanity. And humanity and other humans are the very thing that you need to heal those feelings. They're not pleasant feelings at all. They're not pleasant. I think back and I lived every single day in that space in my 20s. That I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't worthy of being loved, that I wasn't worthy of living any sort of a decent life. I lived that way for such a long time before I realized that I could do something about it. So Tracy's acronym for dealing with shame, we need to repeat that again, Tracy. It's a very important concept for people to grasp. So I'm going to ask you to repeat that acronym again.
Yeah, so I tell people you've got to begin a race. You've got to recognize where the shame is. You've got to accept how it came, and then you have to change it, and then you have to enjoy who you are and what it is about you that you love and allow others to enjoy you too. Shame is always often caught up in our own belief systems and our own core values. So for me, I have a very strong core value of kindness. I always have. I cannot stand humans being unkind to one another. I think it's unnecessary. I think it's futile, and I just think it's really unhealthy for our planet. So for me, a lot of my abuse was unkind. So the reason I felt shamed was because one of my core values was hurt, but I was too young to know this stuff. I was only a child. So I'm growing up disconnecting from the world and not being very kind at all. I'm totally incongruent with myself. And when I recognized, okay, you've become an incongruent because you allowed shame in, because you believed this stuff, and then I accepted it. And as I made the change, like I said, I then could allow myself to enjoy my life and for others to enjoy it. And now, as you know, Tony, you and I both are, we're very kind and we're very generous and we're always helping out in a cause. And in fact, in a couple of months, sorry, in a couple of weeks now, we are actually going to even help the Smith family, which is, a collective in Australia that looks after underprivileged children at Christmas. So, it's incredible what you can turn around, but you just have to remember you always have to enter the race, recognize, accept, change, and enjoy.
So some of the in line with what Tracy is saying, some of the other things that will help you get through shame are those things around talking, writing, journaling, and getting help and counseling and working with people like Tracy. I know for me that journaling and writing very much helps me to work through those feelings and to get on top of them and start to heal them. And I know that there are lots of other modalities that can help with some of this work. NLP, any of the therapies that good therapists use will help you move through this. But some of the simpler things are the ones that helped me the most. Just simply writing down what you were feeling. And then talking to someone about it. So shame thrives in your mind when you don't talk to someone about it. Because that other person will give you a perspective that will help you see and make reality out of what you're what's going through your brain at that moment. I know we've talked about Brené before, but the other body of work that she talks about that is worth mention today is that around developing shame resilience. Because shame, we are predominantly talking about trauma and shame related to trauma. However, you can enter into those shameful feelings in any other ways. We've specifically focused on trauma recovery, but shame is a defense mechanism, and it puts our brains into that. And we've talked about this quite a lot in this series. It puts our brain into an involuntary fight, flight or freeze instinct. So that's our prehistoric brains going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, this is terrible. That's that feeling of shame. And it can come up in social situations, and it can come up just because you've seen or heard something that makes you remember that feeling. And so Brené Brown talks about there's a number of ways that people react to those shame feelings. The first one of those is to move away. And we've talked about this. And moving away means that they withdraw, they hide, they stay silent, and they keep secrets. Again, that back to that concept of secrets. The more you don't talk about this stuff, the more we don't talk about this stuff, the worse it gets. So you might think talking about your particular feelings is the worst thing you can do. Living with it is way worse. Yeah? The next thing that you can do is you can move against. You can try and gain power over it. And that's being aggressive and attacking and trying to control your environment or the people around you. Again, doesn't lead to very good outcomes. It doesn't heal it, and it's not constructive. Or the last, you can move forward. Now, this is the most important one. When I say move forward, I mean that you seek help and move through those shame feelings. So one of the things that Brené talks about extensively in her work in shame is the concept of empathy. So it would appear from Brené's work that shame and empathy are on the opposite ends of the feeling scale. So if you are an empathetic person, i.e. you have kindness in your soul, back to that lovely word, kindness, and you have understanding. So empathy is around feeling into someone's pain and understanding at a human level what that pain feels like. Sympathy is seeing that pain and understanding, okay, that person's in pain. They're two quite different, similar but different. Empathy is the thing that counteracts shame. And so if you're talking about shame, I encourage you, or you're feeling shame, we need to talk about empathy and how that combats those feelings of shame. So shame results in fear, blame, and disconnection. And for those people, when I like to talk about fear, I like to talk about fear in everyday terms. So that's things that I've dealt with. So fear of picking up the phone when it rings. Fear of not connecting with your friends because you're worried about what they might think or you're feeling unworthy. Fear drives you to be worried about things endlessly. Will I lose my job? Will I have a car crash? Are the kids safe? All of those things are fear-based emotions, and they all tie in with this whole conversation that we're having. And one of the other things that Brené likes to talk about is that empathy is cultivated by courage, compassion, and connection. There's those words again. She likes to say that they are a powerful antidote for shame. So I'm going to say that again. Empathy, which is cultivated by courage, compassion, and connection, is the most powerful antidote for shame. So in other words, if we look at it in simple terms, courage is usually speaking out or speaking to someone about your trauma and about your shame. Compassion is about being compassionate to yourself. Often these things were done to you. They weren't done by you. You were not the person who did these things. So be compassionate to yourself. Be understanding and loving to yourself. I know that that's a battle because I've walked that battle. I know how hard it is to be compassionate to myself, to give myself a break. I beat myself up all the time, and it is a daily battle for me to be compassionate to myself, to tell myself, it's okay, you're all right, you are loved, you are beautiful, those sorts of things. And to do that, I actually write them on the mirror in my bathroom because they're the first thing I see when I go in to clean my teeth in the morning. Just a simple thing like, you are beautiful, you are wonderful, you've got this. Anything that flips your mind from that negative, shame-based thought pattern to a more positive, compassionate, connective thought pattern will help in healing with this shame. The other thing that I wanted to mention this morning is that research would suggest that women and men experience shame differently. Tracy, you work with both men and women. What's your experience about shame and the experience of men and women?
I find women go down under shame much quicker without a fight. I find men by disposition fight shame, sometimes negatively, but most of the time they really fight to not feel shame, whereas I find women are naturally a little softer and therefore, you know, Tony, I found women have an incredible capacity to carry, and sometimes that's negative for them because if it looks like they have to face off their husband or they have to disrupt their family or they have to address a daughter or a son or a boss, they tend to have this whole mechanism where they look at that person's life and think, I really can't do it. And so I like to say really sometimes to address change, women have to step into their masculine a little bit. They have to step into that because the feminine will always hold space for it. The feminine energy will always have the ability to hold it. And the feminine energy has the empathy, holds a natural empathetic energy to heal it. So if they can step into the masculine to address it and then back into the feminine, they will have an incredible healing. And so while I find men fight it, I find they don't heal as quickly because they have to step into their feminine to do it. They have to become vulnerable and gentle, and that's quite foreign to American and Australian men, because in both cultures, a man is who he says he is by what he does and what he achieves. And we place that on them from the cradle. We tell them not to cry. We tell them to grow up, tell them to be strong. And neither country has a really kind or safe rite of passage for them to become strongly masculine and not get screwed up with that. So I do find that men can see it and address it quicker, but they take longer to heal, whereas a woman will actually fall into it and almost get caught up in it. And the key for them is to actually step up and say, hang on, let me just take on some of the strong masculine energy and realize this is me we're talking about. This is my life. Like you said, and every morning I get to decide who I am. My granddaughter, who lives with us because she can't live at home, told somebody at school, and that little friend told someone else. Now, she's in year 8, so she's 14 years of age, and so there's a group of girls that are now teasing her about it. And we've had a week of it. And I said to her in the car this morning, I said to her, Maddie, you need to remember one thing about today, because she has to go to an exam, and she was really anxious about seeing these girls. I said, they can only make you feel shamed if you allow it. Anything they say can only live in your heart and in your mind if you give it permission, because they're not your mum, they're not your nana, they're not your dad, They're not your grandfather. They're not somebody who knows you. They're not somebody who understands you. So anything they say is irrelevant until you take it on. And she said, okay, Nan, I'll think like that. And I've checked on her a couple of times and her day's going okay, so I pick her up after the show. But, you know, that's the challenge, is to help women to understand, you know what? Nobody, Eleanor Roosevelt got it. She was an incredible woman of history because she said, nobody can make you feel inferior without your permission. And isn't that so true, Tony?
Oh, absolutely. Again, it took me ages to understand what that meant. It took me ages to realize that I had the control, and I had the control, and all I had to do was speak to myself in a different way. So when those thoughts come up, like you'll go, oh, I really don't want to go to that event because I'm really not good enough to be talking to those women. It often involves women. It took me ages to realize that I controlled that situation. So if I walked in thinking I'm not good enough to associate with these women, I was going to have a very bad time, until I realized that actually I'm okay. I am who I am. I am worthy of human connection. Those three little words were something that helped years ago, when I was really struggling around the whole worthiness idea and feeling very down and dark. As by virtue of your humanity, by virtue of you being born, you are worthy. You are worthy of life. You are worthy of love. You are worthy of connection. Those three little sayings were another three that about 10 years ago, when I did a lot of my healing work, they stayed on my mirror for 18 months. I am worthy. I am worthy of love. I am worthy of connection. Because remember, if you keep yourself away from connection to other people, that's when the shame thrives in your life. That's when the negativity thrives in your life. So remember, we as humans, for the most part, are wired to be connected to other humans, to tell stories, and to connect on a human level. If you're an introvert and you're an introvert in shame, I am telling you from personal experience, this stuff is bloody hard. So not only are you an introvert, you don't really get fulfilled by being around other people, but you're holding on to that shame's got you around the it's got you tied up in knots. Your introverted, shamed self will lock yourself away from the human connection you need to heal. And that's where courage comes in. That's where the courage to talk to someone, the courage to connect to someone. That's where courage in all of this conversation comes in. And it's important to remember that you might see it as a brick wall that you're never going to be able to break through. All it takes is a 1 minute conversation and you're on your way. And I encourage you to look around and see people, good people, people like Tracy, her husband Paul, her family, and any number of wonderful people. All it takes to make that connection is a single sentence. I need help. That's all. I need help. Can you help me? If you connect with Tracy or I or anyone else, the response will be, absolutely, tell me about it. Yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
So that step in healing that shame is definitely the courage to speak up and talk about it. And I've been talking to a number of people this week about men's health in particular, and I know that Tracy is very passionate also about men's health, and I believe that we are coming into quite a tumultuous time for men in terms of their identity and their masculine essence. And so I would say to any of those brave men out there listening who struggle with vulnerability and feelings of shame, please talk to someone. Please reach out and talk to someone. because as we see the rise of equality in women, men who have had the majority of that control and power for the last millennium will struggle to deal with these feelings that will come up because that's happening in our world. So once again, just for the men listening, please reach out and talk to someone. Again, it's just one sentence. I need help. Please help me. You can just say, I need help, and there will be people around to help you. Lots of people do this work now, and if ever there was a time to seek help and heal from trauma and shame, now's the time. So Tracy, we have gone over such a lot in this program today. So we've talked about trauma in terms of guilt, blame, and shame. And so I want to just throw to you for the last segment in summing up what it means to be healed of trauma and to take on the shame, blame, and guilt in our life.
Like I always say, everybody has the life they want. And that can be really hard to hear when you're struggling with guilt or shame or blame. But the truth of the matter is, every person that ever walks into my office, I ask them to tell me about their life. And then my first question is always, how happy are you with that? Because the most important thing that humanity forgets is that we hold all the keys and we hold all the power. No person has the ability to write your life or to make any decisions over it that you don't consent to. And I can honestly say that that is the absolute truth. Your children, your husband, the people that run your country, nobody has the rights to make those decisions unless we allow it. And in fact, this year, a lot of depression showed up for people when all of a sudden that right was enforced by both our governments and we were forced to stay at home. And it made us realize that we're actually a little more vulnerable than we thought. But I am a big believer, and because I know for me, Tony, the biggest thing that changed in my life was the morning I woke up and thought, you know what? I'm giving this all my time and energy, and nobody else is even remembering me. None of the people that walked into my childhood and stole from me, not one of them is thinking of me. Not one of them is remembering me. Not one of them has had a moment's fear that I would rock up at their house or any of the things that I felt. And when I took that back, when I took that power off them, when I took that back and said, you know what, from here on, and I write the story, and it has never looked perfect. And I don't think for a second it's ever going to. Because I'm a big believer in healing as a lifetime journey, and I believe healing is layered. But I can tell you that the best thing you can do for your life is deal with the big rock. So deal with the real issue that you're in shame, or the real issue that you've got guilt, or the real issue that you have to play the blame game instead of just leaving it to be responsive to responsibility. Because once you've dealt with the big rock, you can handle the pebbles. The pebbles will creep back in, but you can deal with them, and you can deal with them on a very easy basis, and it gets easier and easier. But you have to deal with the rock. And like we have said the whole program, and I am a huge fan of Toni Lontis, my beautiful friend, because she is such a great example of someone who has broken through all of this in such a beautifully pure way, because shame does not own you. It doesn't have to hold you, and it really shouldn't be given that power. So please listen to the show and take action. Talk to somebody, write out your feelings, find somebody who can help you or help yourself, and take the race. Recognize, accept, change, and enjoy. I love you all.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Thank you, everyone, for joining us yet again on Radio Tony with Tracy Horton, Tackling Trauma. We will be back with another show next week in the lead up to Christmas. Thank you so much. Don't forget radiotony.com, tracyhorton.com, and reach out if you need some help or some pointers. We'll be back next week, Tackling Trauma, with another segment. Bye for now. Bye, Tracy.
Bye. Bye.